You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes in the West Indianapolis Community News, and today we're breaking down the Pacers' ugly loss last night to the Sacramento Kings. I should say this morning because it's 1 a.m. and the game just ended. We just heard from Victor Oladipo and Nate Bjorkgren, but we'll break down that loss to the Kings and kind of assess where the team is at without T.J. Warren, because 3-3 since his injury, and we got to kind of pick out where the team is at, 6-4 through 10 games, and had some nice bounces. And then I want to look at the Warriors, the opponent tonight, because they have a brutal back-to-back, 10 p.m. and then 10:30 p.m. So for those of you who stayed up and watched Pacers-Kings, I feel sorry for you and myself. You know, we all stayed up late, and the Pacers kind of had this one in their grasp for a second. They got the lead in the fourth twice, and then almost the third time, 119-118. It looked like they were going to have the lead with about a minute and a half to go on a Sabonis shot that was goaltended, but it was a block. They ultimately correctly called it a block for Rashawn Holmes. And then the Kings went on a quick little burst run to put the game away. They ultimately win 127-122, and that's a ridiculous number that you hear right there. 127 points for the Sacramento Kings. The Kings have a good offense. I don't want to belittle the Kings on offense at all, but they were just scoring so easily. They scored 30 or more points in all of the first three quarters. I don't know if they made it in the fourth or not. They might have, but they were just hitting shots from all over the court. They ended the game shooting 56%. They were at about 60% through three quarters. They hit 15 of 32 from three, and it's not like there are some of these games where you just go, well, let me back up a little bit. Sometimes with these games, there is some luck involved. You go, you know, what can you do? And Mikal Bridges is going off. And in this game, the Kings had two ridiculous shots. One was the ball falling to Buddy Hield for a corner three that iced the game. And one was a Rashawn Holmes three with 0.7 left on the shot clock. But I would say outside of those two makes, the Kings just carved up the Pacers defense. It was so easy for the Kings to get points in this game. You don't score 30 points every quarter, you know, easily. It's not just like a thing you stumble into by chance. They did end up 30, 35, 32, 30. So they scored 30 points in each quarter of the game. The Pacers' defense was just not good. Bjorkgren kind of mentioned that after the game. Their defense wasn't up to standard. Victor Oladipo, same thing. Said they just have some stuff they've got to clean up on the end of the floor. Duh. You know, that's a generic answer. But their defense was really bad. That lost them this basketball game. As much as they should be beating the Kings, and their offense was up to the standard they needed at 122 will do it. They got four players scoring 20 points in this game, right? That should beat most teams in the league, but they couldn't get the stops required to get it done. So let's just run through some of the guys' nights and how this was able to happen, right? Vic was eight. You know, you'll look at Oladipo's night if you just are checking the box score, you're listening to this and you didn't get to watch it because it started late. 21 points on 20 shots, 8 of 20 from the field. He had a really, really good fourth quarter, took the game over, hit a pull-up three, hit two nice drives, gave the Pacers the lead twice with made shots, and was really not good on offense at all. I think he was 3-for-16 at one point this game. 3-for-14, excuse me, at one point this game. He was 2-for-11 from deep. This remains the problem that we go back to last season with him, where there's a point where he has to know he doesn't have it and stop shooting. If he's 2-for-7 from three and four of those shots go elsewhere, perhaps the Pacers win this game. So fantastic fourth quarter from Vic. Deserved to get the chance to bring this team back into the game. But terrible first three quarters. Brogdon played a nice game wire to wire. Him and Sabonis continued to be awesome. Sabonis had 28-11 on 12-of-21 shooting. But his defense was not awesome, right? Rashawn Holmes got him a few times. Rashawn Holmes got a ton of rebounds in this game. Rashawn Holmes finishing with 10 rebounds, including 6 on the offensive glass. And a lot of times we'll just go, oh, Miles Turner. You know, Miles Turner didn't have a good rebounding night, so Rashawn Holmes did good. And Miles Turner had an okay rebounding night, but a lot of Holmes' rebounds were battling with Sabonis. So Sabonis did, again, have a good game. He played really well. He had 12 points in the first, 3 minutes of the game and kind of set the tone. But he got beat by Holmes a few times on the glass. That really hurt the Pacers. Rashawn Holmes had a very good game for the Kings. Justin Holiday started in place of Aaron Holiday. That was a pretty significant change. Everybody on Twitter, you've all been telling me that this is needed. The Pacers have to do this. Their starting lineup's been so bad, and Justin Holiday was a minus 13 in 34 minutes and scored 8 points. So maybe it's just that being the fifth option with the starting group is not the easiest thing in the world, guys. Maybe that's the case. But Yeah, I know Justin had a tough task guarding Harrison Barnes tonight. And normally I wouldn't say that's a tough task, but Harrison Barnes had a really, really good game. He was 10 of 14 from the field and had 30 points. Justin was obviously a factor in that. Couldn't really get his body into him. Harrison Barnes had a nice back-to-the-basket posty game. So not a good, you know, Justin Holliday is a starter. I get why everybody wanted to do that except for me. I was not for that. He did not play awesome in this game. He'll have a nice chance to rebound. He shot fine. And the other 21-point scorer was McDermott. McDermott was amazing on the road. He always is 21 points on 8 of 10 shooting. Just ridiculous. Plus 5, he was the highest plus-minus on the Pacers. Bjorkgren had him in at the end of the game to try to get offense, right? The Pacers grabbed the lead a few times with just a few minutes to go. So why not just keep the offense in, try to get the game back? So here's Bjorkgren was asked after the game by Scott Agnes of Fieldhouse Files, you know, why is it Miles in the game at the end? Because they had McDermott in over Miles when the Kings scored like 8 points, 10 points, I don't know, in the last 2 minutes to put the game away. And of course, you know, when that happens, you go, well, where's Miles? Why isn't he in? McDermott was in for offense, so Bjorkgren basically said there was a challenge that I mentioned earlier where Sabonis had a goaltended or a blocked layup that they called goaltend originally that was being reviewed. You can't sub during a challenge, and I don't think there was a dead ball for the rest of the game. So they didn't call timeout. They kept McDermott in for offense, and then they didn't score or use him at all. So now they're stuck with McDermott on defense, easy points with no Miles Turner under the basket. And the Kings put it away. And Bjorkgren acknowledged he should have put Turner in earlier, like with 5 minutes left in the game. So he's putting that one on himself for not having Turner in. And it's a tough one for the Pacers. You know, you look at those two threes by Buddy Hield, who's a good shooter, but it was a lucky shot. You know, Fox got stopped at the basket, and it just sort of fell to him in the corner. And the Rashawn Holmes three, and you know, Bjorkgren called it a not fun night because they had the balls not go there, bounce their way. Oladipo said the same thing. They had a few balls about not bounce their way. And that's true, but they also just played awful defense the whole game and couldn't make up for it with you know, the way I would describe this night for the Pacers is they got what they're supposed to get from their good offensive players, and the ancillary guys were just not there, right? They got 20 or more from the guys that are heavily involved, Brogdon, Depot, Sabonis, and McDermott. And then Sumner had an okay efficiency game. Edmund Sumner, by the way, sneaking in 11 and a half minutes in this game, was probably the best rotation player who came in off the bench, sans McDermott in this game. But, you know, Miles Turner, ancillary offensive player, 2 for 7 from the field, 1 for 4 for deep, 6 points. Didn't cut it. Edmund Sumner had 8 points. That's fine, but, you know, they need more from their ancillary guys. Justin Holliday, 8 points. Aaron Holliday, 1 for 6, 4 points. He's got to start making some damn shots. Jakarr Sampson only played 5 minutes. He only had 2 points. They just didn't get enough from those guys in the aggregate. That's 8. I'm doing math in my head right now. 16, 21, 28 shots from those guys combined. And they scored, I think, 28 points. 16 plus 6 is 22. Yeah, they scored 28 points on 28 shots. You just need more from those role player guys if you're going to play bad defense. And they didn't get it. So pretty bad loss for the Pacers, I would say. I mean, not that the Kings are just awful and it's a road game, whatever. Maybe awful is a bit extreme, but this is a tough road trip. This was the easiest opponent. They really needed this game, and they just came out 2 games in a row, including the Suns game, stinker defense, and they deserve to lose. So they're going to have to get better on D if they're going to win some games later on this trip. And they have Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, the Suns again, and then Paul George and Kawhi to do it. So they needed this game, and they didn't take it. They're going to be kicking themselves if this road trip doesn't go well. So hopefully they can turn things around against the Warriors. I'll talk about them in the third segment here, but let's talk about the post-TJ Warren era Pacers for a second, because things are looking a little interesting for this team in general. But first, let's talk about betonline.ag. I've been talking about them on this show for a while now because they're the official betting sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network and the only place that you should go for all your gambling needs. If you're ready for some football, we just had wild card weekend in the NFL. College football title game just happened. I hope you got in on that. That game hit the over-under exactly at 76. But yeah, divisional round coming up for football and NBA in full swing, college basketball full swing. Only one place that has you covered and one place we trust to get those bets in. BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKDOWN. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus. They have NFL games of the week. They have the top college football games, I guess had would be more accurate there, on all the biggest headlines in sports. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Jump in on the action. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So I got this reply on Twitter today. I don't remember who it's from. I'm sorry. If you're a listening person, please point it out to me that it was you. But talking about, you know, hey, maybe the Pacers without Warren are just kind of mediocre. And I was like, you know what? Let me reassess what this person is saying. They are 3-3 since the Warren injury. They beat the Pelicans on a miracle. They beat the Rockets handily. That was an impressive win. And they smoked the Cavs by 20 points. And the Cavs are actually okay. So that's actually an okay win as well. They lost to the Knicks, who are actually okay also. They lost to the Suns, who are good. And they lost to the Kings, who are okay. So that's kind of like fine. You know, you'd look at that section without TJ Warren and go 3-3, whatever. So the thing about this Pacers team in that stretch, and the trouble I have is the NBA.com doesn't update stats fast enough. But they, in that stretch, sans Warren, the six games, they before this Kings game, they were eighth in offense in the whole league in that time. So since New Year's Eve, eighth in offense at 114.5 offensive rating and 19th. In defense at a 110 defensive rating. Their net rating plus 4 has them about 8th, 9th. You know, that number is going to drop after this Kings game. And then at this Kings game is going to lower those numbers. You know, their offensive rating will probably hover about the same in that top 10 range. Their offense continues to be pretty good. Their defense will probably drop. So what are we zooming out to in the Warren era here is the Pacers are really lacking on defense. And that's so unlike the Pacers that we've come to know and love as we watch this team. The Pacers are never bad on defense. The Pacers have, in the Dan Burke and McMillan eras, not been bad on D. This is kind of, without Warren, an uncharted territory, but they just don't have the matchups for these bigger forwards, right? The Cavs, they got by because the Cavs don't really have the forwards. We talked about that before that game. You know, they have Chetty Osmond, but Okoro didn't play. They didn't have a big forward that the Pacers had to deal with. Easy win. The Knicks had Randall as a big forward. They had my gosh, I can't even remember. Alec Burks kind of playing well as a big forward. Austin Rivers played forward for them and did well. The Pelicans had Brandon Ingram do well. The Rockets didn't have any forwards, and the Pacers won. The Suns had Bridges do really well. They have Jay Crowder. They have Cam Johnson. And then the Kings, Harrison Barnes was killer as a big forward in this game. So that without Warren, they don't have the perfect matchup for those guys that they used to have. And Brogdon's done okay. You know, he's got the size to fill in, but they don't have it for the full game or as consistently as they used to. And I think we're kind of seeing this happen now for the Pacers, where they just don't quite have the wing D or the size to match with these teams. And you know, with these last two games with the Suns and the Kings, McConnell was out, the bench was weaker, and Justin Holiday's a good wing defender to his credit. But he's kind of been playing more guard role because of the absence of McConnell. They have to move Aaron Holiday down a position. They are moving Justin Holiday around just a tiny bit as well. You know, he got kind of bullied by Harrison Barnes in this game. So, you know, you can't rely on that crutch as much without McConnell. Just an overlap of bad timing of injuries has meant that bigger forwards have just killed them. So the Warren era has been kind of defined by this bad defense that they really need to recorrect. And they were doing so well on D. Even with Warren out for a little bit, you know, those first couple games were fine because they were still keeping guys in front of them, it felt like, and they really struggled with that tonight. Fox was getting to the rim so easily. Buddy Hield had a few tidy drives. Tyrese Haliburton had a few easy, just dump it into the post plays, and Rashawn Holmes just killed them. So the Pacers' defense really needs to improve, and the Sans Warren timeline has been really rough. I mean, really, the Pacers are 6-4. And that's like, I'd say that's about an adequate assessment of how they have played this year. But if you want to zoom out, you know, they got really lucky in New Orleans and they hit a game winner at the last second against the Celtics. It's not that hard to say, oh my gosh, they're a couple bounces away from 4-6. Now, that's the dumbest thing to say ever. They blew it in the fourth quarter against the Kings, the Knicks, and the Celtics the second game. Like, if those go right, all of a sudden you're like, oh, they're 9-1, whatever. Yeah, you know, it's dumb to play the what-if game. You know, they won and lost the games they won and lost. But maybe they're not quite as good as their early season suggested. With, you know, Warren, they kind of skated at first. They were 3-1 in the first four with Adam. So it kind of felt like, oh, you know, the Pacers are surviving this. Maybe they can get by till Lamb comes back. They'll be okay. And Lamb should come back soon-ish and help a little bit. But right now, in the short term, with no Warren, the Pacers are a little stumbly, and they're closer to mediocre than good in the very immediate present term. And with a tough road trip coming up, that's not a good time for that. And we learned before the game from Bjorkren that, You know, McConnell returning on this road trip is tough with COVID. You know, he's not traveling with the team. He's been in a hospital, and he's been getting tested every day and following the COVID protocols for the league. But, you know, the optics, first of all, with the league going, the league's having a big COVID outbreak problem right now, postponing games. The Pacers have fortunately dodged that, but they have to be very careful getting McConnell back. He has to travel, which during COVID is hard. So Bjorkgren wasn't even sure if how it was going to work with the league and getting him back with the team during this road trip, would that even be possible? So if they don't have McConnell and Lamb can't come back until the road trip's maybe over, it's going to be a rough five games for the Pacers. Their defense could be bad for quite a stretch, and they're going to really need something I talked about in the first segment, some of those ancillary guys to step up. If they get, you know, Rhode McDermott is what it is, but, you know, maybe he'll only score 15 points. But if they can get better contributions on offense from just two of Turner, both Holiday brothers, Sumner and Sampson, suddenly their outlook, they have a little bit more wiggle room with the defense, and suddenly their outlook for the rest of this trip dramatically increases. So, yeah, the no Warren era, kind of rough. We'll see how this plays out for the Pacers the rest of the season, but well, the season is too extreme for, you know, a couple-game sample of bad defense. But we'll see how this plays out in the immediate future. They got to step up on that end because they got Steph Curry tomorrow night. And I want to talk about the Warriors because they're a pretty fascinating team. They're actually a very fascinating team that, you know, they have Steph Curry, who I, of course, love to watch. We all love to watch. Warriors have had some amazing games against the Pacers in the past. So let's talk about the Warriors. But first, we're going to take a little break and talk about the great people over at Rock Auto because one reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money, so you can use that on other important stuff. And right now, money is very important for everybody. Who doesn't love money? Why would you spend more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a car dealership or a new car dealership when you can get them for cheaper at rockauto.com? They're a family business who've been serving auto parts customers for online for 20 years. They'll have everything you'll need for your car or truck, and it'll be delivered directly to your door. Their catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle. And best of all, their prices are always reliably low. So go check out rockauto.com right now. See all the parts they have for your car or truck. And write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box. They know that you came from us. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. The Golden State Warriors. They got punched on early in the season because they were 0-2 with two ghastly losses. They lost by 39 in their second game to the Bucks, and they lost by 26 in their first game to the Nets. And then Damian Lee hit a crazy buzzer beater, and they beat the Bulls in their third game. Otherwise, they would have been getting destroyed for being 0-3, and Curry played pretty awful in those first three games. And now the Warriors are 6-4 and kind of anti-Pacers. Not struggling right now. They're surging right now. They've won four of their last five and seven of their last nine, I believe. One, two, three, four, six in their last eight. Very impressive. And Curry's been amazing. Curry is in the MVP conversation. I think every conversation about the Warriors starts with him because with Thompson out, with Green being a little more limited as his age goes up, much of the Warriors, and he just had one of his career worst shooting games, which means he's going to go absolutely ape against the Pacers. But since those opening two games where they just got absolutely smacked, Curry is averaging 30.9 points per game on 45-40-95 splits. That's 40% shooting from three on 12 threes a game. So, yeah, Steph Curry is really good. He's the engine that drives this solid Warriors team. And it's crazy that, you know, Andrew Wiggins in his career, proven non-winner, right? Does not really help teams elevate to a playoff level. Kelly Oubre has not been on a playoff team in his career. James Wiseman's a rookie. Paschal is a second-year player. Damian Lee hasn't proven to be a rotation player on a winning team. Kent Bazemore's had a nice career. He's super old now, though. Brad Wanamaker is an okay guy. He's one vet they've had that's established himself. Basically, everybody except Steph and Draymond, though, that they play in their rotation, kind of unproven pests, right? And Steph is just so good that he can set up these guys to win. So the Warriors, 108 offensive rating, 108.5, basically. That currently ranks them 18th in the league. They got to be better on that end. That'll get better as Steph continues to be good. They're 22nd in defense. So the Pacers just have to score better in this game. And they actually scored well against the Kings. I'm not trying to say they have to do better than that. They just have to. They can't have an off night because you're playing Steph Curry. You'll just lose. And the thing about the Warriors is, you know, Wiggins, it just isn't, you know, he's not going to be awesome. He's just not. And he's hitting 39% of his five threes a game And maybe that sustains over the whole season, but I think we kind of know who Andrew Wiggins is. Andrew Wiggins can beat you a little bit, and Kelly Oubre is due, and we know how players who are due do against the Pacers. See also Mikal Bridges, Rishon Holmes, Harrison Barnes. This season alone, we've already had a few. Kelly Oubre shooting 14% from 3-on-5 attempts a game. Draymond struggling from the field. Even if you can slow down Curry, these Warriors guys aren't like slouches. They could eventually get some points there. So the Pacers offense has to be good to keep up with this team. I think that you know the Warriors are better on offense than defense. I think we know that. I think that's obvious given their personnel. And I think the Pacers, though, have an obvious way to score, a very obvious way to score. As good as Draymond Green is at captaining a defense and pointing stuff out and doing pick-and-roll coverages, just throw the damn ball in the post to Sabonis. Either Draymond Green, James Wiseman, Paschal, or Kevon Looney is going to be guarding him. He'll get easy points. He had really easy points early in this Kings game. They kind of went away from it because he was getting slowed down and playing a bunch of minutes. I think that Sabonis can have a good game against this Warriors team, and I think it's crucial that he does. I also think they need to keep Draymond out of actions, which could mean, you know, you see a lot of screens from the likes of, like, Victor Oladipo or whoever they start at the three. Maybe Justin Holiday becomes an important screener in this game. Try to get Wiggins involved in screening actions to get Brogdon and Oladipo going. Just with, you know, lesser pick-and-roll defenders involved in the action. And then if Draymond does come to help on those from the weak side, you can kick out, maybe get Miles Turner or Sabonis some advantages in those ways. Because the Pacers, again, their offense has to be good in this game. And the bench must be better, right? Sumner is going to play, I think, again. I think Bjorkman's finally realizing what he's got in him, which is fantastic. You know, playing Keelan Martin over him made no sense to me. And Keelan did not prove he belongs in the NBA. And Sumner, in two appearances, proves that he's a good player immediately. So I think Sumner's going to play. I think Sumner can play some good defense on some of these wings the Warriors have. If he can play the offensive game he had against the Kings, that'd be great. But, you know, Justin Holiday's going to have to make some shots. Aaron Holiday, at some point, if he wants to stay in the rotation, like what are the odds Jeremy Lamb comes back, right, and McConnell shows up on this road trip, and suddenly they, you know, maybe they keep starting Justin, and suddenly their bench is McConnell, Sumner, Lamb, and Doug McDermott, and Aaron's just not playing. Like, he's got to make the shots at some point, and I can't believe I'm saying that because I'm still defending him as the starter, right? I didn't mean to dunk on Justin too hard earlier. He just had an off night in the same way that Aaron's had an off 2 weeks, but he's got to make shots at some point. Anyway, defending the Warriors, the Pacers have to score, obviously. The Pacers attack the Warriors' weakness of defense. Steph Curry is just ridiculous. Like, they're insane. Ball pressure is gonna be crazy with him because there's a chance that he just throws it away, runs around like a maniac, and hits 5-6 threes against the Pacers. I think he's very capable of doing that. And Wiggins can score in isolation, and I think Oubre can be a spot-up threat. He has not been this year, but he can be. So they're going to have to try to give up something. I'm imagining it's going to be like what they did against the Suns and Mikal Bridges. They're going to let Oubre just be open to try to sell out to stop other stuff. They're probably going to leave Draymond open unless he's the screener. So one of those guys is going to have to beat them. And if Draymond and Oubre is hitting shots, their defense might look bad. They might have to adjust. And who knows? But they've got to shut down the stuff. They've got to cog up the actions. Like, the Kings just made it look so easy on just simple pick and rolls. And, you know, they hit the threes, obviously, at a high clip, which makes any defense look bad. But the Kings just made it look easy. At least the Suns, for some of that Suns game that the Pacers gave up 125, there were moments where the Pacers were offering legitimate resistance, and then the Suns had to just dump it out to Mikal Bridges, and he scored, which is not what he usually does. You know, that's better than the alternative, which we saw in this Kings game, where they just got carved up by simple shit. I think excuse my language. Against the Warriors, they have a brilliant offensive player and one of the best point guards of all time. Like, there is nothing simple. It's all complicated and really impossibly hard to defend and warping and manipulative. They have to do well with the simple shit, or the Warriors are going to beat them. The Warriors are just going to beat them. So it's going to be an interesting one. I think after that Kings loss, even if it's a back-to-back and they're playing their stars a trillion, quadrillion minutes. I actually asked Bjorkman about that before the game. He said that Brogdon and Sabonis and him have discussed and like are okay with those minute numbers, which seems crazy to me. And for him, it's about, you know, the total workload over a whole season, and that includes like practices and shoot-arounds. He's not working them as hard as the you know, the players on other teams would be worked so that the aggregate between games and those is different. I don't know. That kind of seems weird. Like, why can't Depot play back-to-backs if that's the case? And, you know, if Goga comes back and Sabonis is still playing a ton of minutes, does that actually make any sense with his development preachings? And why aren't other teams playing guys that much who are also not heavy on practice? It doesn't make any sense. But that's what he said, and if the players are buying in on it, they're going to keep playing that much. So maybe they can bounce back and the back-to-back won't matter. It's not that far of a drive, as Adam told me yesterday. But we'll see. I think this is a pretty important game all of a sudden after that Kings loss for the Pacers. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully they can pull out a win, and we can stop talking about how terrible their defense is. Adam will break that all down for you tomorrow. He'll break down all the Warriors, Pacers, fun stuff tomorrow night because that game is super late at 10:30. So stick around for that. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk Warriors, Blazers, Suns, Clippers. We got it all coming for you this week on Locked On Pacers, so stay tuned for that. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.